BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Our story begins in the Sao Paulo state of southeast Brazil, where inmates at a number of prisons were looking forward to the Easter holiday. Easter meant that family and friends could visit. For some offenders, it even meant approved trips home. Then the news came. Easter festivities, much like everything else in the world, were canceled thanks to COVID-19. Prison authorities didn't want all that to-ing and fro-ing, all that spreading of germs. Like so many of us whose holidays have been canceled, inmates took the news poorly. According to one source, as many as 1,500 of those Brazilian prisoners escaped. This wasn't an isolated event. During the worst weeks of the pandemic, prisons around the world saw many attempted breakouts. In Iran, 74 prisoners escaped. In Italy, 16 escaped, and in Thailand, it was at least 7. 14 also escaped from a jail in Washington state, 9 from South Dakota, and 1 from North Carolina. Some of these escapes were probably opportunistic, prisoners taking advantage of a chaotic situation to avoid doing their time. But other inmates were probably motivated by fear, fear that the close quarters of their soap-deprived prison wings would soon become a breeding ground for a deadly pathogen. As one Colombian prisoner put it, we're all on death row now. As a philosopher who works on ethical questions that arise in public life, this series of news stories got me thinking about the morality of prison breaks. I wanted to figure out, is it ever justified to break out of prison? The standard assumption is that it's never okay to break out. But in our heart of hearts, we know this can't quite be right. Prison breaks loom peculiarly large in literature and popular culture. And it is striking that we're typically rooting for the escapee, paradigmatically when the escapee is innocent. When Harrison Ford's character in The Fugitive is convicted of a murder he didn't commit and makes a run for it, we cheer him on as he evades law enforcement and hunts down the real killer. Likewise, the image of Tim Robbins in The Shawshank Redemption, emerging from the end of a long sewage pipe and tasting free rein, prompts nothing but a sense of righteousness. And when we read Alexandre Dumas' The Count of Monte Cristo, we not only applaud the protagonist's escape, we approve when he seeks vengeance on those who framed him. Part of why we're entranced by prison breaks, especially as depicted on the big screen, is that they tend to involve fantastic ingenuity. In Cool Hand Luke, Paul Newman's character uses chili and curry powder to evade the guard dogs. That escape in The Shawshank Redemption is achieved thanks to a rock hammer and a strategically placed centerfold of Rita Hayworth. And in Escape from Alcatraz, which is based on a true story, Clint Eastwood and his accomplices make conscientious use of spoons, papier-mâché dummies, and a raft made from raincoats. Add to all this the thrill of the chase, the risk of failure and capture, and it's no wonder we're enthralled. But in at least some of these ubiquitous prison break stories, we don't just approve of the how, we approve of the why, the reasons that motivated the escape. But this raises our very question of what such reasons could possibly be. Now, I would never advise someone to break out of prison. But philosophically, I'm still left wondering, what could morally justify doing so? As the coronavirus breakouts make clear, this question isn't just academic. Prison breaks really are possible. Many prisoners will, at some point, have to take the decision about whether to try to escape or not. The U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics notes that in the U.S. alone, there are at least 2,000 escapes per year. These numbers are very misleading, since they include those who go temporarily AWOL from a worksite, for example. Successful breakouts from maximum security penitentiaries, of the sort depicted in cinema, are admittedly rare, but they do happen. I think there are at least 3 conceivable moral justifications for breaking out of prison. The first, most straightforward justification concerns prisoners who face imminent mortal danger. The philosopher Francis Bacon invited his readers in 1630 to imagine a fire engulfing a prison, noting, "If felons be in jail and the jail is set on fire, whereby the prisoners get forth, this is no escape." Bacon's claim was that the necessity of preserving one's own life constitutes a sufficient justification to break out. In 1974, a California court agreed with Bacon's logic, ruling that prisoners who escaped because they were told to submit to rape or be killed should not face extra punishment for the escape itself. Now imagine you were an immunocompromised inmate in an overcrowded prison as the coronavirus runs rampant through the wing, with no prospect of medical care anytime soon. Some, if not many, of those recent escapees may have faced such conditions. It's not obvious to me they did anything wrong by making a run for it, even if it wasn't ultimately in their self-interest to do so. Importantly, the necessity defense for breaking out of prison isn't a literal get-out-of-jail-free card. It's limited. That 1974 California decision put conditions on it. First, that there's an imminent threat of serious physical harm. Second, that there is no time to appeal to prison authorities or to the courts for help, or that such appeals have been futile. Third, that no violence against prison staff or other bystanders is deployed during the escape. And fourth, that prisoners must turn themselves in once safe from the initial threat. Satisfying that last condition shows that the prisoner wasn't intending to evade punishment, but rather the danger to his or her life. The original prison sentence, on this view, must still be served. Maybe saving one's life from imminent danger is the only adequate justification for escaping prison. But I doubt it. I think that sometimes it can be acceptable to break out precisely to avoid serving one's sentence. That brings us to a second set of cases, those in which the offender is unjustly sentenced for a crime he or she did not commit. These are the prison breaks that arouse our sense of justice most in cinematic and literary depictions. The easiest version of the case is one in which the trial itself is plainly corrupt, suffused with racism or flagrant disregard for obviously exonerating evidence. Those sentenced to prison in such circumstances have essentially, in my view, been kidnapped by the state, and no one should doubt that it is morally justified to escape one's kidnappers. But things get complicated. What if someone really did commit the crime, but the process that convicted him was still procedurally corrupt? In that case, I suspect that the offender has been wronged, but since he's guilty, he probably still owes it to his victims to undergo punishment, which would make his escape unacceptable. The philosophically hardest case is one in which someone, through sheer bad luck, is convicted of a crime he didn't commit, but through a perfectly fair trial. Suppose his attempts to appeal the decision meet a dead end, and he is looking at spending decades in prison. Would it really be wrong for him to sneak out if he could? The third set of cases is the most controversial and has the most radical implications. These are the cases in which the offender really did perpetrate the criminal conduct in question, but that punishment for the conduct is itself deeply unjust. These cases come in two flavors. Some are cases of flagrantly disproportionate punishment, where the sentence is wildly harsher than it should be. Think of Anwar Holmes, a Texas man who was caught possessing 16 grams of cocaine, a small bag, but was sentenced to 80 years in prison. Others are cases in which the conduct in question never should have been criminalized in the first place. Think of those gay and lesbian men and women imprisoned for consensual sexual activities. When the mathematician Alan Turing violated those laws in Britain, his eventual punishment involved chemical castration. But had he been imprisoned, I believe he would have had every moral right to escape. This right is also limited. Just because an offender disagrees with the criminal law he broke does not morally entitle him to escape. Just because an offender thinks his sentence is harsher than it should have been doesn't entitle him to escape either. There is enormous reasonable disagreement about what punishments are disproportionately harsh and what acts should or shouldn't be criminalized. And in a democracy, we should settle our disagreements about policy democratically. So long as a legal rule is within the range of what's reasonable or close enough, it seems to me there is a civic duty to comply with those rules. Still, some extra punishments and some criminal laws really are beyond the moral pale, even if they are enacted democratically. This is a fraught matter of moral judgment, but judgments can be made. The proposition that people like Alan Turing or Anwar Holmes morally owed it to their fellow citizens to languish and die in prison beggars belief. Now, there are many more questions to answer if we are to have a complete moral theory of the justified prison break. Perhaps the most obvious question concerns the use of violence against prison staff in the course of an escape. In some countries, like the UK, prison officers perform a vital public service at little pay, and most work hard to keep offenders safe and to enable rehabilitation within the constraints of the system. I myself have taught philosophy classes in prison, made possible thanks to the moral decency and commitment to education of prison staff. Moreover, officers are not equipped with the information they would need to reliably distinguish the unjustly incarcerated prisoners in their midst from the justly incarcerated. And even if they could distinguish them, they would lose their jobs and probably face prosecution if they just suddenly started letting select inmates escape. Accordingly, it is very difficult to see prison officers as though they were nefarious kidnappers who were liable to be harmed if necessary when their hostages try to break free. Violence against prison officers is very difficult to justify, at least in prison systems like the UK's. But in other contexts, it's less clear. Where criminal justice systems are predominantly tools of repression, it is easier to see officers as agents of an unjust state, who are complicit in upholding an evil system, and who may themselves regularly deploy wanton violence against prisoners. Where that is so, any violence against them that is necessary to achieve a just prison break will be easier to justify. Finally, a complete theory of prison breaks should address not only the ethics of escaping prison, but the ethics of assisting others to do so. Prison breaks often depend on outsiders smuggling in tools or standing ready with a getaway car. It is easy to console ourselves with the thought that even if people are unjustly incarcerated, and even if they have a moral right to escape, it's not our place to assist them in breaking free. Indeed, many people helped themselves to a similar thought in the United States prior to the Civil War, when escaped slaves would make their way to Canada through the elaborate network of safe houses known as the Underground Railroad. Those who participated in the Underground Railroad disagreed. They thought that they had a moral duty to undergo significant personal cost to secure people's liberty. I suspect that this is an unsettling comparison for many, especially in the United States, where it seems likely that a non-trivial number of the millions of people currently in state confinement are unjustly incarcerated, sent to prison for crimes they didn't commit, or for disproportionately long sentences, or for conduct that it was unjust to criminalize in the first place. In refusing to do our part to rescue those whose freedom has been unjustly snatched from them, are we like those who sat idly by while escaped slaves were hunted down? Imagine you lived in a slave society today. Wouldn't you have an obligation to try to break the slaves out? If your reaction is that this comparison is preposterous, dig deeper. In virtue of what is it preposterous? With prison breaks, as with everything in life, what we are morally required to do is constrained by feasibility and by risk. Prison breaks are tough to pull off. Even when escapees make it out alive, and they sometimes don't, they are typically recaptured. Likewise, penalties for assisting prison breaks are stiff, just like penalties were for helping slaves escape. And odds are, if we started breaking people out of prison, prisons would just become better fortified. But these facts don't let us off the moral hook. I believe that all of us have a civic responsibility to help secure the freedom of those unjustly incarcerated. Even though we don't often know their names, and even though the placement of prisoners far outside our communities makes their fate out of sight, and so out of mind. The key is to remember that when prison breaks are justified, it's typically because of underlying injustices in our institutions and our laws. Eliminate those injustices, and few, if any, prisoners moving forward would have a moral justification to break out. The upshot of these philosophical speculations is that prison breaks may be justified more often than we think. We shouldn't simply assume that every prison break we hear about on the news is unwarranted. Instead, we should be prepared to evaluate the justice of each on a case-by-case basis. At least in this respect, real life should be more like the movies.